Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, this episode should probably be a bit quicker than our last few, because we're only going to talk about three films. I saw all three. You only saw two.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a bit of reversal of fortune. You saw the two independents. And I actually saw the one that's probably going to win the weekend, but neither of us saw Skyscraper.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I owe Dwayne The Rock Johnson an apology. Not only have I not seen Skyscraper, I didn't see Rampage, I didn't see Jumanji. It's not, I don't have anything against you. I just don't end up seeing your movies.
I wanted to see this one. It just didn't work out timing-wise because I usually enjoy a good old-fashioned rock action movie. I did see Rampage. It was harmless. It was, you know, entertaining. And so I suspect this one, which looks a lot like a Towering Inferno meets Die Hard with The Rock. It's probably quite entertaining in a fleeting summer sort of way.
But it is sporting a Rotten Tomato.
Which is surprising because, you know, it's still The Rock.
Are we getting rocked out, by the way? Is there just too much rock? I mean, that's
maybe because it is. That's very true. It's a little rock overkill, and so that could end up hurting him because generally his stuff is fun enough to watch. But at a certain point, enough's enough.
All right, we'll see if I'm pretty sure you can connect the wine this evening.
The wine is a cab called The Dreaming Tree. And yes, that's actually a very good one. 2 weeks in a row, you've done very good with the wine selection.
And this one actually tastes pretty good because mm-hmm. it's a couple more bucks than I usually spend on this.
Ah,
but
well, you get to keep the rest.
Perfect.
It is perfect because it does refer to the movie from Iceland that we'll be discussing last, Under the Tree.
I wonder if this is our first film. We've been doing this for years now. And I wonder if this is our first film in Icelandic.
I don't know. No, because I think we actually met. Wasn't that an Iceland film? The one that the ho, hi,
oh.
ho,
whatever. No, but they were Land speaking
ho.
English. Land Ho.
Land Ho,
they
I think, was the very first film that we actually communicated.
That was a long time ago.
So that's how long it's been. But so maybe we have
how
this
fitting.
Iceland
yeah, the
connection.
First time we really talked was at a film set in Iceland.
Yeah.
And so. I think there probably was Icelandic in there.
Yeah, so we have a little bit of a connection going there.
All right, well, I saw the biggest film this week, the one that's opening on the most screens, and the one which will win the weekend monetarily. Hotel Transylvania 3, Summer Vacation. And it's probably a good thing I saw it, because I saw the first two. The first one was in 2012. Adam Sandler's Dracula runs a hotel in Transylvania for monsters. It's a monster hotel, so they can get away and just relax, because they need to relax, too.
Of course.
And a human shows up. Like a frat bra, voiced by Andy Samberg. Him and his daughter, Dracula's daughter, Mavis, voiced by Selena Gomez. She falls in love with Johnny. Monster-human relationship. Oh no, the conflict. But at the end, the message is, you know what? Monster-humans, it doesn't matter. Deep down, we're all the same. Hotel Transylvania 2, 2015. Mavis and Johnny have a kid. Little Denisovich. Dennis. And Dracula's... He's worried, you know, is the kid a human or is the kid a vampire? Naturally, he wants it to be a vampire so he can bond with granddad. And so all the movie, you don't know what he is, and it turns out he is a vampire. But it shouldn't matter because humans and vampires and monsters, there's no difference. We're all the same deep down.
It's a little Shades of Twilight going on there in this animated flick.
Team Johnny.
Team Johnny.
Hotel Transylvania 3. Okay, everybody knows everyone's the same. Monsters, humans. Mavis realizes dad, Dracula, needs a vacation from running a hotel, so they go on a cruise, like a floating hotel. And there's a villain in this one, Van Helsing. We know Van Helsing from other Dracula films, mm-hmm. and he's voiced by Jim Gaffigan.
Fun.
Van Helsing's not a good vampire hunter. He just loses. Like, there's this long 100-year montage of him losing and losing and losing, and finally he's just his head. He's so old now, he's just his head on this steampunk body. And he enlists his great-granddaughter, voiced by Catherine Hahn, one of the bad moms. To seduce Dracula so he could finally kill all the monsters. I wonder if there'll be a message on deep down, monsters and humans are all the same. That message may pop up again, which is what I'm trying to say is these films are enjoyable. Everybody likes the Hotel Transylvania films. They're light, they're fluff, they're mostly funny, but they're starting to circle back around and reuse material.
Well, how can you not at a certain point? There's only so much. I just always love whenever I see that Selena Gomez is voicing a character in this, I just always think of Gomez and like the Addams Family. So I think there's like it's like perfect casting because that's what I always think of. I don't think I saw one and two. As much as these films look like perfectly harmless, fun, animated flicks, I just never saw the first one. So it didn't make sense to go necessarily and see the third. Also considering it just happened to be a gorgeous day outside and I just could not bring myself to sit in a theater. But more importantly, you took a plus one. And what did he think?
The all-important five-year-old demographic, he liked it. We've been quoting it. We've been singing it. Because the climax, which should not work because it's a dance-off. The climax is a dance-off between like evil techno music and feel-good tunes, which has to defeat the evil techno music. I feel terrible even saying that out loud, but it works. And it had both. And I noticed something. Director, and this is the same director who's directed all three, Russian, Genndy Tartakovsky. And I know him from Adult Swim, Cartoon Network. He did Samurai Jack. I love that series. So he's back now, and it shouldn't. He made a really smart move. He knows there's two demographics coming to see this movie. Mm-hmm. 5 to 9-year-olds and their 35 to 40-year-old parents.
That's right.
So there's fart jokes. We know who that's for. Mm-hmm. There are that, you know, when Adam Sandler gets that falsetto voice like Billy Madison, there's a whole bunch of that. But there are 90s jokes. There's a Macklemore joke. There's Macarena joke. And I'm like, oh, you're catering to your 35, 40-year-old. So our subconscious is telling us, wait, I recognize Macarena. I think I like this film because I recognize this. And it's like, you know what? It's a gimmick, but it works. And I walked out with a smile on my face. There's a lot of one-liners, a lot of sight gags because, you know, the werewolves are in this, Frankenstein, the Invisible Man. You know, these are one-dimensional, you know, one-shot gag characters that, you know, have no story arc or anything. They're just there for the one-liner funnies. There's a new supporting character. The cruise ship is staffed by the Stoic Fish, and I think they're all voiced by Chris Parnell. And they're hysterical. That's where the Macklemore jokes falls. And that joke works so well, I can't stop thinking about it. Call me plus, the 5-year-old plus and the 37-year-old plus. So if you're a 20-year-old, don't go. Mm-hmm. If you're a 50-year-old, don't go. In fact, if you don't have a kid, don't go.
Yeah, and if you've got a grandkid, maybe go, because it'll be entertaining for them. But hey, any film that has a dance-off in it with animated characters usually does, at least has a couple of memorable scenes in it. So, I'm sure it'll get plenty of replay on the disc version when it comes out or as a rental. So, that's good. It's good that there's something new out there for the youngins.
And there may or may not be a message that deep down, we're all the same.
That's right. And the rest of you can go see Twilight.
All right, our next film, Break Break, is very interesting. It's interesting how we fell down on this film. It's called The King. It's a documentary. The King references
Elvis.
And you said, and I think you're right, you are a bigger fan of Elvis than I am. Mm-hmm. I'm going to agree, because I was never alive at the same time Elvis was. He died 3 years before I was born.
Ouch.
But I know the gist. There was a young rebel Elvis, and there was an older, non-rebel, fat Elvis. And Eugene Jarecki, I've seen one of his documentaries before from 2005. It's called Why We Fight. It's about the military-industrial complex. There was a more recent one in 2012 called The House I Live In about the drug war. I didn't see that one. I'm going to go ahead and just cut to the chase. I gave this movie 4 out of 4 stars.
You did.
This movie knocked me off my feet. It shouldn't work. There's a metaphor he's using
that many times.
Many people call it a stretch.
It is a stretch.
What is Eugene Jarecki doing with Elvis?
You've hit the nail on the head of what I did not like about this film is that it's metaphorical overkill. So what Eugene Jarecki is doing is he basically is taking this 1963 silver Rolls-Royce that Elvis owned and takes it on this current cross-country tour, and all these folks come in and sit in the back and talk about their memories of Elvis or how Elvis influenced them. And it intercuts then all these things that are designed to show Elvis's rise and fall as a metaphor for our country and the rise and fall and the decline of America today. And it attempts to just connect these dots to race relations and politics. And so my problem is that we have so many of those kind of documentaries right now that I wanted a good old fashioned Elvis doc. And instead I got a documentary that drags Elvis, who's been dead for 40 years, into the current political climate. And that bothered me.
And I latched onto it because I think it works. Jarecki is saying, and this should be the king, : how America turned into Fat Elvis. and he does, buried in here, not even buried, right on the surface, is not a buried. Standard Elvis documentary. We go to Tupelo, Mississippi, where he was born in 1935. We see, where he lived. And he interviews current Tupelo, Mississippi citizens who I think are the most miserable people on the planet. They're like, Tupelo sucks. This is a terrible place. I see why he left for Memphis. So Jarecki takes us to Memphis, and we see where Elvis learned pretty much the black music he stole, which is what he did.
But that also, I thought, was a bit of a stretch. I think that's the point that they were that it takes a view.
Hound Dog and was written for a black woman.
Oh yes, but it doesn't change the fact that you could take apart almost any musical act today and you find what influenced them and the sounds that they drew on. And there are people who gained success with a song that was written for somebody else.
But it's not, so cultural appropriation's not the problem. Chuck D from Public Enemy, who wrote a very famous lyric about Elvis and his feelings about Elvis, says, "I do not blame Elvis for cultural appropriation. Do your thing. Spread the music. But what you did was take the black man's music, get rich, and do nothing for the black man."
That made a very interesting point, because Van Jones is in there too.
You never saw Elvis at a civil rights march.
That was interesting. I did like some of what it was making, some very interesting points, and so I get it. But overall, I just felt that it was hitting the metaphors. It was just such a stretch. The Rolls breaks down on the road. It was a metaphor for something. Somebody who ever gets in the back seat and starts crying, it's a metaphor for something. It just kept hitting you over the head with trying to connect the current political issues and the divisiveness with things that happened in Elvis's life. And I just felt that it was way too much of a stretch for some of it. So while I think it made some very sharp points and I learned some interesting things, and I do agree, it was very interesting to think back and realize that, Elvis had, there was such a huge influence on Elvis from the African-American community down south. And the fact that here he had so much clout and he could have used that. But he was one of the artists who really basically just decided he wanted to just stay out of that fray.
And they don't say it overtly, but it's hinted at, why he stayed out of it. He's from Tupelo, Mississippi.
He's from Tupelo.
I understand why people don't, feel this is over-metaphored and everything's a metaphor and it's scattershot. I get it. But for some reason, I think those metaphors just strike home. This was filmed before the election. So you have Alec Baldwin saying, there's no way Donald Trump's going to win. And you have Ethan Hawke saying how much he hates Colonel Tom Parker for what he did. And you have James Carville, who I think has one of the better interviews. He says, Elvis made America taste different. When they said, when Muhammad Ali hit you, you tasted different when you stood back up. The Declaration of Independence back in 1776 made the world taste different. America was going to govern itself. No king, no monarch, no dictator. We're going to do this ourselves. So it made the world taste. So another metaphor there. But all of these back to back to back, stacked on top of one another, combined with the folk music people in the backseat. You know, there's Lana Del Rey, there's Emmylou Harris, there's M. Ward. Works. And I just loved everything about it.
To me, the Rolls-Royce itself does represent the older Elvis. And I prefer to remember the pink Cadillac Memphis Elvis. And so I think this will be very divisive among Elvis fans. I think some will feel the way you do and love this film. But I think a lot of Elvis fans, those like me who listen a lot to like Elvis on XM radio and the Elvis channel on Sirius XM and have made that pilgrimage to Graceland, which I did like in 1988. College friend and I, actually the wife of our good listener, Brett, his wife and I just got in the car one day during spring break and we drove to Memphis and, just got such an interesting new appreciation for his music and his talent. And that's when I really just kind of became a fan. I remember, I didn't watch the 68 comeback special when it first aired, but I saw a big chunk of it while I was on the Graceland tour. And I just really, I watch Elvis for what he did bring to the world for music. And he did manage to put the music, the cultural music that did belong to the African-American community down south, but he did bring it into the mainstream. And I love that he sang so much gospel and blues. And so it's just that I want to remember Elvis without having to think about Trump in the same sentence that I hear about Elvis. I'd rather not have that in a film.
America used to be defined as a democracy. Elvis used to be a rebel gyrating his hips on television so much that Ed Sullivan wouldn't have him on a show and parents wouldn't let their kids watch it. America is now defined as capitalism, and Elvis was popping pills in Vegas wearing jumpsuits. Oh, what a perfect metaphor.
but you could take all sorts of moments from the rise and fall of Elvis. I mean, to die at, what, like 42 is just
not
insane.
Donald Trump,
but
Elvis collapsed on a golden toilet?
Not yet, but I'd rather send people to Mr. Rogers, Won't You Be My Neighbor.
He's our Colonel Tom Parker.
I know. And do we really need that? I mean, do you need another? Do you have to see more of that? All you have to do is turn on the news and you get more than enough of the disintegration of America. I don't want Elvis mixed up with that right now.
Speaking of other situations that are spiraling out of control, there's an Icelandic film called Under the Tree. And it starts docile. It's actually shot in Reykjavik. And you know it's in the summertime because the sun never goes down. Even
That's
at midnight,
right.
It's still light outside. And what is less threatening than Reykjavik, Iceland? I've been there. It's not very threatening. In fact, it's quite nice. neighborly conflict. It's catalyzed by a big, beautiful tree in the backyard.
Another metaphor.
I don't think it is. I think it's actually a tree.
It is a tree, but I think the Under the Tree title and the intersecting stories that are going on in this film is meant to be another giant metaphor.
There are two families. They're neighbors. They share a wall like a duplex. One of them has the tree in that backyard. It's grown very big, and it shades the neighbors. Neighbor's new wife says, "I like to sunbathe. Why don't you trim that tree back a bit?" Things happen. There are misunderstandings. There are allegations. Who knows? Maybe they did it. Maybe they didn't. It spirals out of control very quickly, and it ends
very,
very shockingly.
Badly.
I remember I texted you, WTF, oh my lord, this has the most WTF ending ever.
It ends bad.
What were your immediate gut feelings about what's going on in Under the Tree?
Well, that's only half of the story. So what you have going on initially when the film opens, you're introduced to this guy who...
Atli,
who is watching a sex tape that features him and a woman who's not his wife.
That's not cheating because you're in it, right?
Yeah, that's right. And so his wife kicks him out and basically cuts him off of life with his cute little girl. And so he goes to his parents' house to crash there for a little while. And so it's his parents who are in the midst of this feud with the neighbor.
The parents are the tree owners.
Are the tree owners. And so the film kind of takes these parallel paths where it's kind of talking about the story of Atlee trying to kind of get his life and wife back and his daughter. And then what's going on with this feud with his parents and their neighbors. And how it just all escalates. And it the last 5 minutes is indeed, it sort of comes to this bloody climax that reminded me of that Nick Cage movie, Mom and Dad, when there's that giant fight scene going on.
It might be bloodier than Mom and Dad.
It might be, but that's sort of the first thing I thought of whenever anybody picks up anything that looks remotely like a pickaxe or something.
Yeah, they use what is available in their house.
And in the garage. Yeah, it's pretty brutal, but it also then it ends exactly. The final shot is exactly what I saw coming.
You can see that happening. But at the time, when it happened, I didn't foreshadow that. But at the end, I was like, "All right."
I knew it had to come around. But it was still. It had me. This film had me going for like the first hour. I was totally in it. It was a very interesting kind of dark comedy. And it certainly puts any kind of neighbor feud in perspective. And things are just going awry. Pets go missing. Tires are slashed. Things just escalate out of control.
That's the little stuff.
That's the little stuff. But that's really what's happening. And then it goes from just being this kind of movie about the little stuff and this kind of quiet film about this neighborly feud and about this poor guy who really made a big mistake where his wife was concerned. It goes off the rails in like the second half when the mom is just completely nuts and everything just goes so out of control.
Or is she the one who's level-headed?
Maybe.
She's like, you know what? This is a nice tree. Why do you want to cut it down?
That's right. But it was actually an interesting enough film. It's not one of those foreign films that I tuned out of. I kind of stayed with it, but it's an art house film.
Well, it's also
sure.
One that you would define as a dramedy. In the middle of this, there are comedic elements. In fact, Atlee and his mom, Inga, who you just called nuts, the lady who says, you will not touch this tree, they're actually both Icelandic comedians.
Oh.
The Icelandic community has to now see these two in more serious roles. It's directed by Hafstein Gunnar Sigurdsson. He took this film on the festival circuit. It went to pretty much every festival there was. I think the biggest one was the Venice Film Festival last year, and it was nominated for the grand prize. I didn't check, but I would be shocked if this wasn't Iceland's entry into the Academy Awards, but I didn't check. I don't know if I – it's nowhere near my favorite film of the week, obviously. We already know what that is. But it is the highest tomato reading this week with 85. Out of the three movies we've discussed, it's the clear winner among critics.
Yeah, because I don't think that many other folks have actually seen it yet. But it's a great choice if you are in a feud with your neighbors and you need a little perspective. I would send everybody to this
movie. In fact, you should go together with your feuding neighbors so you realize – you
just
know what?
Stupid.
Let's not let it get to this. Let it get to this.
Yeah, so I do think that's who it could be for. And it's, you know, Artie Chick reviewed this one for Chick Flicks. And so it was absolutely more in her bailiwick. It is an art house film. It's a film for the art lover, but not so much. It's not really a mainstream film except for the occasional little bits and pieces of it that you know, that some people might find intriguing, but it's an odd little indie.
Well, we actually review 1 to 3 odd little indies
every week,
and you just happen to see the two this week, which is awesome. I love that I saw the blockbuster this week.
You did.
Because it usually didn't happen that way. And it might even happen next week. Next week's a huge, busy
huge
week. It's crazy how many films are being released next week, including one. We're both going to go see. I'm going to be the guy in the audience going, why am I here?
Mamma Mia.
Because I love ABBA.
Here I
go. I do love ABBA, but I can't believe they sequelized Mamma Mia.
Love it.
But there's another sequel next week that I'm really looking forward to because I love the first one, The Equalizer 2. I'm looking for that.
Yeah,
that guy also kills people with hammers and nails.
I think you're flying solo on that one because I'm going to go see Blindspotting instead, which was edited by my old America's Next Top Model editor Gabe Fleming. So we'll see
but
how that
wanted,
is.
You wanted to tease something. You already wrote the review. It's only in four theaters this week. You know, it's an indie, so they're doing what they usually do. Two theaters LA, two theaters New York. I actually saw it before you did. Mm-hmm. And encouraged you to see this. Why do you want to tease Eighth Grade?
I want to tease it because there's so much out there about it right now, and I wanted to weigh in and just sort of throw my endorsement behind it as well. Because of the main reason I wanted to talk about it very quickly was because it was my favorite of the bunch, because none of these movies this week came even close to my enjoyment of Eighth Grade, which is just this so authentic and raw. And if you have a kid between the ages of 13 and 15, especially a girl, this movie's rated R, but you will want to see it with them.
No, I encourage all girls to see this. I should not connect with this movie. I have nothing in common with 8th grade girls, 13-year-old girls. And I walked out of there talking to my wife, you, and my female coworkers, like, how did you survive being 13 in middle school? I couldn't have done it.
Well, and we didn't have the pressures of social media. I mean, this, you know, the YouTube generation and Instagram and texting and sexting and all these things going on. And so when you think about how tough eighth grade is under the most normal non-technical circumstances, non-technology inundated circumstances, then it just makes this movie all the more real and interesting to look at. And so, yeah, I just wanted to put it out there so that folks who might be listening in New York or LA where it's already out, or who are looking for something different that will come out amidst all these other things we're going to see next week, it's worth keeping an eye out for, because I'm afraid of it getting buried.
No, it will get buried by the blockbusters, no doubt. Everyone knew it was going to happen. But this is the one that actually already has awards buzz. Mm-hmm. We're talking actress, screenplay, and picture. But I don't want to beat to death, because we are going to attack it next week. And honestly, yeah, you can't see this right now unless you're in New York and L.A. It will expand to more cities next week. You know what did? What was only in a handful of theaters last week that expanded really quick. I'm talking like 900 theaters this week, which is a gamble. It's Sorry to Bother You. My big winner from last week, which I'm still thinking about and encouraging all my friends to go see, is now, absolutely, I guarantee you, playing in a theater near you. It just expanded wide this week. Take the time to go see Boots Riley's Sorry to Bother You, starring Lakeith Stanfield, because you probably didn't live in a big city last week. But now's your chance. Go, go, go.
You like that one way more than I did, but I won't. I'll let you have your pick of the week.
I'm not telling them to go see The King or Under the Tree. Go see Sorry to Bother You. All right. Yeah, this does it for our quick episode. Remember to come back in next week when we really analyze Eighth Grade, because I have some things I want to say about that movie.
And Mamma Mia, too.
I really hope. I hope actually I'm not as animated about Mamma Mia, because that means I probably didn't like it. Quick recap. Hotel Transylvania 3 : Summer Vacation ends in a dance-off, and I walked out of the theater with a smile on my face. It's funny.
And that works. That's what a summer animated flick is supposed to do for you.
The King knocked it out of the park. I've seen 50 documentaries this year. It's my favorite documentary by far. The metaphors worked for me. Oh. I love this movie. Thank you, Eugene Jarecki.
No, with so many really good documentaries out there, how can you possibly have anyone go see The King instead? I say go watch the 68 Comeback Special instead, or go see something that's a little more uplifting, like Three Identical Strangers.
Actually, that's not uplifting.
I know.
That is not uplifting. What are you doing to our audience? You're lying.
All right. Or go see Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Everything has to be uplifting. It's not a requirement.
No, but don't go putting Elvis and Trump in the same sentence. Not good.
Under the Tree. I think we both like this as well. As for the, you know, the oddity, quirk, indie foreign film that it is, it's got ideas.
It's different.
That's a good way to put it. It's different. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.